Marshall, you can proceed to call court to order.
Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Cochran, Judge Sleater, Judge Larson, the Honorable Jean M. Cochran presiding.
Good morning. Welcome to this session of the Minnesota Court of Appeals. As you know, we are proceeding by Zoom today. With me on the panel are Judges Randy Sleater and Elise Larson. We have four cases on our calendar today. The first case is A24-0919, OCH Bookstore versus Just Take Action. And I'll note for purposes of the recording that today is January 14th, 2025. I'll ask also for purposes of the recording that counsel, when you start your argument, that you introduce yourself and the party you're representing. As you know, each party will have 15 minutes for its primary argument, and appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. You should be able to see your time remaining in the grid view on the screen here. And I'll remind anyone who might be watching that the only recording that's permitted is the one being made by the Minnesota Court of Appeals. No other recordings are permitted except with the express prior permission of the Minnesota Court of Appeals. But our recording will be available on our website within approximately 24 hours. So with that, counsel for appellant, you can proceed when you're ready.
Thank you very much, Judge. My name is William Paul, Bill Paul. I'm an attorney from Duluth. I, along with Miles Ringsred, represented Just Take Action, JTA, in fighting the eviction action commenced against JTA by OCH Bookstore. The brief sets forth, appellant's brief sets forth generally the timelines, and I would submit to the court there are two primary issues to be addressed in this appeal. First, is Just Take Action entitled to a jury trial on the issue of its attorney's fees? I would respectfully submit, Your Honors, that the case, the long-standing case of United, oh boy, United Prairie Bank Mountain Lake versus Haugen Nutrition and Equipment Company makes it crystal clear that when there is a contract that provides for an award of attorney's fees to the prevailing party, that the prevailing party is entitled to a jury trial on that issue. Judge Byers, the...
Mr. Paul, can I just clarify, isn't it true the judge did not rule that your client was not entitled to a trial by jury, but the judge ruled that your client waived? So isn't that really more directly the issue, whether the district court abused its discretion in concluding that your client had waived a right to a jury trial?
You are absolutely correct, Judge. The motion that I brought for an order granting us a jury trial was not directly addressed. Judge Byers, the successor judge, said in her order that at the hearing she had ruled and denied the request for a jury trial. Obviously, that is not accurate because she took it under advisement and would let us know. And then ultimately, she decided that by the passage of time, JTA had waived its right to a jury trial. Now,
counsel, you would agree that Minnesota case law provides that in civil settings, that right can be waived if there isn't a timely demand made for a jury trial.
That is 100% correct. That is what the law is. Now, in this case, Judge, JTA was not entitled to a jury trial until it was declared to be the prevailing party. There was a specific motion considered by Judge Tarnowski as to who was the prevailing party in this case. That motion was heard and considered in late 2021, and an order was issued by Judge Tarnowski on July the 2nd of 2022. So literally before July 2nd, Judge Cochran, of 2022, JTA could not have demanded a jury trial because it had not yet been declared a prevailing party. Then, as the brief states, and I was out of my office. I mean, I'll never kind of forget it. It's not on the record, but I was sitting in a Fairview hospital room when Judge Tarnowski's decision came down, and I was out of the office, my office, from July 2nd through the end of 2022. And then, of course, Judge Tarnowski tragically passed away. She was a close friend of mine. And then there was a May request for the appointment of a successor judge, and kind of the rest is history. And then I brought that motion in October of 2022 for a demand for a jury trial. And again, these are all undisputed facts, but the unusual kind of timeline here, Judge, put it this way, there was never a specific waiver of a jury trial. And as I argue in appellant's brief, you know, what constitutes a demand that is too late? Is it if you wait 30 days? Is it based upon a district court judge's discretion? If he or she decides 30 days is too long, or 60 days is too long, or 90 days is too long, does that constitute a specific waiver of the demand for a jury trial? So
help me understand. I understand there were a lot of unfortunate circumstances here, you know, with health issues and the tragic death of Judge Tarnowski, but it seems there was a period from January, according to the briefing, you were unavailable through the end of 2022, but I don't see any indication in the record that you were unavailable after the end of 2022. So it seems there was a window from the beginning of January 2023 through sometime in March 2023 when Judge Tarnowski was tragically killed in the accident that the motion could have been filed, and help me understand why the filing of it after that time wasn't untimely when the order from July required a filing of an affidavit regarding attorney's fees. So that, in my, you know, view of that July order, it seemed to kind of start the clock for considering whether a request is timely made. So given, you know, that it was over a year from when that order was issued, and there, you know, post the end of 2022, it seemed like there was a significant period of time, even up till March, when a motion could have been filed.
Yes, there could have been a motion filed earlier, but and honest, I can't remember the circumstances, but from January to March, which is a very relatively short period of time.
But you're already on notice that something needs to be filed, right? From that July order.
Right. The affidavit of attorney's fees. That is correct. And in hindsight, you know, on January 10th, I should have filed a motion in front of Judge Tarnowski, asking that she allow for a a jury trial, and 2020 hindsight, Judge, but in and let kind of the timeliness of this appeal be an example. The justice system oftentimes is lengthy. For example, if I call the district court administrator today and ask for a motion hearing date on any case I've got, it might be 6 or 8 weeks out. And I don't understand why that is, but it is what it is. So the 90 days from January 1st to the Judge Tarnowski's passing is a relatively short period of time, I would submit to your honors, in order to obtain a hearing date.
So, in your view, then, at what point would the request have become untimely? And I'll let Judge Larson ask a question. Sorry.
Well, as long as the file is open, I mean, it can't go on for years, and it didn't go on for years. It went on for months. Well, aside from the eviction action, it did go on for years, 2.5 years. But I don't think that unless there is case law that a intent to waive a jury trial can be arbitrarily determined by the passage of time. So I submit that once this case was reassigned and we obtained a hearing date and a motion was brought, all within the calendar year of 2022, that would be a timely demand. Judge Larson, were you going to ask a question? I see I only have 5 minutes left, and I wanted to address the duration of the eviction action and the what I would submit is the abuse of discretion by Judge Byers, and maybe I shouldn't call out by name, but it is what it is. This eviction action did not last for 30 days. Indeed, but I think I may have interrupted you. Judge Larson, may I ask you to ask me?
I was just going to ask, it seems to me that one of Judge Byers' considerations in deciding the waiver issue was the fact that you had co-counsel. And I guess what is the record in terms of your, co-counsel's ability, during the period where you were, it sounds appropriately on leave. What are the obligations of your co-counsel to be responding to the July order when you were not in the office or available?
Well, I'm kind of the chief cook and bottle washer in with respect to this case, and really, while I was out of the office, my personal and professional life was at a standstill, and it really did not occur to me after July 2nd to call up co-counsel Miles Ringsred, who's listening. Of course, you see him on the you see his name on the screen. And say, hey, Miles, take care of this, because it was I that brought all of the motions for summary judgment. It was me who corresponded with Mr. Dean and Judge Tarnowski. I mean, I handled the bulk of this case, and again, armed with 2020 hindsight, would I have d done it differently based on the procedure? Yeah, Miles, file a motion August 1st for a jury trial in front of Judge Tarnowski, and arguably we wouldn't be here. So move
Mr. Paul, I'm going to ask you a question on that second issue you were about to get into. Explain to me what I have a hard time understanding from your argument in the brief, at least, is the court granted your client, I believe it was your client's request to stay the eviction proceeding after approximately a month.
right.
How do we give meaning to a stay if the court allows attorney's fees outside of the stay of the proceeding? In other words, what do you interpret a stay, an order staying a proceeding to mean when it comes to awarding reasonable attorney's fees?
Here's what I would respond. The order staying the eviction action was, in practicality, a order by Judge Byers that OCH Bookstore, the commercial landlord, was not entitled to kick out our client, the commercial tenant, JTA, from the premises. So if the eviction action, the actual act, Judge, of getting JTA out of the lease commercial space was stayed. That didn't stop. Stay and stop are two different things, in my view. And the record.
Well,
that,
that's part of what I was asking. I'm having a hard time understanding that distinction. I understand there was collateral cases and then all related to the same parties. But it's the eviction, it's the lease contract that allows for attorney's fees. And if that proceeding is stayed, I'm having a hard time understanding how one could get attorney's fees in collateral actions that are unrelated to a case that stayed.
Well,
or related, but not part of the same case.
Well, here's how I respond, Judge. And if that's your mindset, forgive me, then I would ask you to take into consideration at page 20 of my brief, and this is a letter from Attorney Aaron Dean to Judge Tarnowski, and I'm quoting from it. This is dated October the 1st of 2021, okay? Long after Judge Byers has issued an order staying the eviction action. There remains OCH's eviction action in court file number 69DUCV2197. So Mr. Dean is admitting that in October of 2021, there remains the eviction action. And then after that, I write to the judge saying the eviction action, nobody's asked it, that it be dismissed. And then after that, he brings a motion to dismiss the eviction action. So Judge, you can, it's impossible to reconcile that the eviction action was stayed in January of 2021, and Aaron Dean, on behalf of OCH Bookstore, brings a motion to dismiss the eviction action in October of 2021. So if you decide that the eviction action ended in January of 2021, then respectfully, you're disregarding the record that is crystal clear that the eviction action continued through all of 2021 and indeed until Judge Tarnowski granted the motion to dismiss the eviction action, and then thereafter declared JTA to be the prevailing party on January 2nd of 2022. And I see zeros up there, and I'd love them not to be there, but they are.
Thank you. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Mr. Dean, you can proceed when you're ready.
May it please the court and counsel. My name is Aaron Dean of the Moss and Barnett Law Firm. I represent the respondent, OCH Bookstore, LLC. Next week, on January 21st, 2025, marks the five-year anniversary of the various lawsuits that were commenced in this case. I want to explain to the court why the district court should be affirmed in all respects in how it has resolved the lower court proceedings. I think there's really three key documents for this court to look at, and I'd just ask that the court review them after today's appellate oral argument. The number one main document is the February 20th, 2020 order issued by Judge Byers. It's an important order. It's at Appellate's Appendix, pages 1 and 2. And the reason it's important is Judge Byers, from the very beginning, had this case. She stayed the eviction action, and then Judge Byers allowed the other two proceedings where there were competing damage claims to proceed. The next important document is the November 11th. 2021 stipulation to dismiss, signed by all of the parties. That's at Respondent's Appendix, pages 1 through 6. And the reason that is so important is that stipulation dismissed all claims and damages, including legal fees. And two of the three lawsuits. In the Just Take Action lawsuit at Court Action 160, and in the OCH lawsuit at Court Action 197, excuse me. The only thing left at that point was to determine whether any legal fees were allowed to be recovered in the eviction action. And the important point about the February 20th order from Judge Byers is that the eviction action was stayed 30 days after the eviction action was commenced. What happened after that point? Well, the parties went forward on their competing claims for damages, and those claims ultimately were settled.
Isn't the reason why the eviction action was stayed is there were sort of the merits of the contracts between the parties that needed to be resolved, and removing someone from the property before some of those decisions had been made just procedurally doesn't make sense in the context of this kind of litigation?
Your Honor, I think that's a fair summary. What had happened in the eviction action, that was just to determine the possessory right to the property. The competing damage claims, and there were very serious claims about drug use, about leaving incapacitated people unsupervised on floors, wandering a building that was under construction. I mean, very serious claims. At one point,
do you disagree that a lot of that litigation sort of went to the merits of whether or not the eviction could happen? I mean, I understand, I understand the position regarding we had a stipulation about the fees with respect to the other cases. But I think you probably concede this in your brief that like there were merits issues that were decided there. But I guess in terms of seeing the eviction action as only being this 1 month period and really not even taking into account sort of the after time, why isn't that a problem?
It's not a problem because after the eviction action was stayed, all of the legal fees that were incurred by the parties from February 20th, 2020 going forward, they were all dismissed.
As Mr. Paul pointed out, there was a letter in October from OCH regarding the eviction action and a motion to dismiss the eviction action and a hearing on that. And I believe the motion to dismiss was brought by OCH. So why wouldn't the costs in October, November, and December related to responding to the letter and the motion be attorney's fees that should have been included as related to the eviction action?
If the court were to allow those limited fees, we'd live with it. We don't think that's the right result. The district court already considered.
Why is it not? I mean, the district court didn't really address those fees in the order. The district court's order is pretty brief in terms of the fee determination.
Yeah, what happened, Judge, is we had the settlement in place to resolve the two big cases where Just Take Action was seeking $6.5 million of damages and all of the legal fees associated with that. And we were getting those two lawsuits dismissed. And then we were trying to get the eviction action also dismissed, and Just Take Action would not allow that. So we had to then bring the motion to dismiss. So there was very limited legal fees, and it's kind of ironic for Just Take Action to say they want to recover legal fees for the action that was stayed years earlier, and then also recover legal fees on the motion to oppose the motion to dismiss. But I'd really like to go back to some of the key issues in this case, which, you know, start with the waiver of the jury trial on the legal fees. The district court was well within its discretion to find that right, whatever it was waived. I don't think you have that right to seek legal fees in front of a jury in an eviction action where it's only a possessory right to property pursuant to statute. But Just Take Action waited 484 days from the July 2022 order to when they filed their fee petition in October of 2023. And as we pointed out, in our brief, you know, Mr. Paul was incapacitated for a period of time, caring for his wife, and no one begrudges him for that. But he was filing pleadings in other cases, as we pointed out, page 10 of our appellate brief, footnote 5, as early as September 13th, 2022. So he was not fully incapacitated. He was in charge of the case, and he had co-counsel, Mr. Ringsred, who was able-bodied and able to proceed at all points in time. I think what we'd really like to see this court do is affirm the award of legal fees for that $19,447.50 to bring to an end this 5 years of litigation. Now, Judge Byers also said that if Mr. Paul and Mr. Ringsred and their client had not paid the prior motion for sanctions order when they were sanctioned, $2,000, to reduce that fee award by $1,000 each. So that would just bring the fee award down to $17,447.50. And there was no abuse of discretion in how Judge Byers determined that. One of the anomalies.
As Mr. Paul pointed out, Judge Tarnowski's order did allow for costs and disbursements, and the judge really didn't explain, that I recall seeing, an explanation of why only the statutory $200 was allowed. How do you respond to that?
The biggest issue, Judge, was the fee petitions themselves that were filed by Mr. Paul and Mr. Ringsred. Their initial fee petitions did not include any costs. Whether that's a waiver, whether that's an oversight, whether, you know, whatever the explanation by Just Take Action, it's really, you know, their own fault for doing what they did. And I don't think we can ever lose sight of the fact that the vast majority of the legal fees and the costs, I mean, the costs like for deposition transcripts, they were all incurred in the two civil lawsuits, the 160 matter and the 197 matter, where Rod Raymond and Just Take Action were deposed several times. And, you know, they were seeking $6.5 million. All of the costs for that would have been subsumed as part of those lawsuits, which were resolved, which were dismissed, in which Just Take Action dismissed all right to attorney's fees and costs in those two cases. So I think that's the explanation for it. It's we are very fortunate that Judge Byers had the bookend orders in the case. The very beginning on February 20th, 2020, and then at the very end with the March 5th, 2024 order. Judge Tarnowski ended up receiving the assignment of the consolidated case when the eviction action was stayed and the two other lawsuits, the 160 and the 197 actions, were consolidated, and Judge Tarnowski presided over them. And so Judge Byers was already familiar with this case and kind of its tortured history with having three separate lawsuits. One thing I'd want to also point out is on the legal fees, you know, the only party who would be entitled to recover the legal fees would be Just Take Action, not Rod Raymond individually. He's not a party to the lease. And the affidavits or fee petitions that were submitted don't really provide a very good explanation about Rod Raymond's exposure to legal fees separate from his company. I think one of the keys to kind
question,
of
question, and it relates to an issue that you've argued was raised for the first time in reply. And so I sort of just want to set that aside, but I'd like to give you an opportunity to respond to this argument about that the other litigation really dealt with the same operative facts as the eviction action. And I'm interested in, what do you think the import of the language and the stipulation regarding fees is in relation to our case law with respect to the same operative facts, litigation with the same operative facts?
Excuse me for interrupting, Judge. The stipulation to dismiss from November of 2021, stipulation is just like a contract. And in that stipulation, the legal fees in the two main cases were all dismissed. Legal fees and costs. So I don't think the court even has to look at what the operative facts are regarding the eviction case that had been stayed years earlier. That at that point, it doesn't matter. There's already a release. There's a dismissal of all of those legal fees and costs. You know, as I kind of go through the last part of, you know, my presentation, we did bring a motion to strike. And we don't think that the reply brief and all the new arguments are appropriate. Judge Siegel, you know, did issue an order on October 23rd, 2024, and deferred ruling on that to this panel. And in order to assist the parties to just bring closure to the case, even if this panel considers their reply brief, I think that the reply brief and all of its new arguments can still be dismissed, and the same result should apply. The district court should be affirmed. Judge Byers got it right in her 2024 order, and we're looking for a full affirmance and an end to 4 years and 51 weeks of litigation in this matter. So we're looking for a full affirmance. Thank you.
So I have one question with regard to your motion to strike. Do you disagree that sort of you raised the language in the stipulation in the respondent's brief for the first time? So those aspects of the reply brief that are talking about the stipulation or responding to your arguments with regard to the stipulation should not be struck?
No, but I also don't think it really matters at this point. I think the reply brief, whether it's considered by the court or stricken and our motion to strike is granted, it really doesn't touch on the main issues in the case, which are waiver of the jury trial, no abuse of discretion. The $19,000 amount was correct by Judge Byers, minus the $2,000 for just take action, not paying the prior sanctions order. And three, the overall dismissal in 2021 compels the result that there couldn't be any more legal fees of hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars for the eviction action that was stayed. What the court does with that motion to strike, I think it will end up being a footnote to the court's opinion or just a separate order that will be a one-liner. Thank you for the court's attention and for giving me this opportunity to present OCH's case. Thank you.
Any further questions from the panel? All right. Any rebuttal, Mr. Paul?
Yes, very briefly, although I'm likely to use all 5 minutes. Abuse of discretion is set forth, and the definition of abuse of discretion is set forth at page 21 of appellant's brief, and I'm going to read it. Abuse of discretion refers to a standard of review that evaluates whether a lower court, in this case, Judge Byers, made a decision that was arbitrary, capricious, or based upon an erroneous interpretation of the law. If a ruling contradicts the evidence available in the record, it may be reversed on the grounds of abuse of discretion. Now, in this case, also at in the addendum, at page 24, this is Judge Tarnowski's order dated January 28th, 2022, 1 year after the eviction action was stayed, meaning JTA could not be kicked out. She writes, and I quote, OCH Bookstore's motion to dismiss its eviction action against Just Take Action, which originated in court file number 69DUCV 20179, with prejudice is granted, comma, the eviction action is hereby dismissed with prejudice and shall be considered an adjudication on the merits for the purpose of res judicata. However, the court makes no determination as to a prevailing party at this time. And so I would submit that the record in this case makes it crystal clear that Judge Tarnowski understood that the eviction action continued up to and through January 28th, 2022, because had it been resolved prior to then, there would have been no reason for Mr. Dean to have brought a motion to dismiss. Now, the trial court record is available to you folks, honorable judges, to review, but this was an extensive, litigated, contentious piece of litigation where the landlord was hell-bent on getting Rod Raymond and Just Take Action out of the leased premises. And to that end, and it's reflected in the record, Rod Raymond wasn't deposed once for 8 hours, not twice for 8 hours, but he was deposed. He's the principal of JTA. He was deposed three times, 8 hours each time. That is illustrative of what OCH Bookstore put Rod Raymond and Just Take Action through in order to achieve its unsuccessful goal of getting Rod Raymond and his company kicked out of the leased space. I was required to bring motions for summary judgment, three of them, and 10 serious breaches of the lease were whittled down to two, and that was whether or not JTA had provided proof of insurance to the landlord. And as the record reflects, we obtained during discovery emails between the principals of OCH Bookstore affirming that they've got the insurance information and that it was sufficient for the purposes of the leased premises. I would also point out that we needed to bring a motion in front of the court to undo a fire hazard that was created by the landlord. They put a padlock on the door, then called up the fire marshal and said, look, they've got a padlock on the door. And we pointed out to the fire marshal that the landlord put the padlock on the door. That created the fire hazard. So I am telling you, as alluded to by Judge Tarnowski, she indeed left open the door of us bringing a motion for the imposition of sanctions for bad faith. And so this was long, it was contentious, and for there to be a 30-day period of attorney's fees in a 2.5 period of litigation belies what is in the undisputed record. Thanks for your patience in listening to my rambling that I feel I make sometimes.
All right, thank you to both counsel for your arguments here today and for your briefs. The matter is submitted. We will issue our opinion within the statutory time frame. I hope you both have a good rest of the day.
Thank you. See you around. Take care, everybody. Be safe.